Chapter 39, Beginning the End of Old Bad Seeds. It was a satisfying time. Everybody was getting better, inside and out. I could often hear the sergeant and the corporal engaged in animated discussions up in the side room about things they had heard, both scraps through the captain's door and from their classes with the captain himself. I could see that he had a real talent for teaching, and the results were certainly brightening up our little world. Busuku's boys loved the yoga. They instantly learned to respect the idea of a perfect pose being any one which was done with the very best of one's honest ability. And in this, no one could deny that the sergeant's quiet boy was an unquestioned master. And so he, too, became a fine teacher, and I could see the powerful seeds from it literally changing his face and his leg every day. With Busuku himself, though, there was a problem one day. The class with the boys was too big to fit in my cell, and so he would just open the door with the crossbar that wasn't a crossbar and have some of the boys on one side of the bar and the rest on the other. And then once in a while, Long Life and I would get up to straighten a leg or lick a hand for encouragement. And Busuku, well, he had this slightly imperious way about him. And after all, they were his boys. So he would stand up during the class with his hands on the bars and yell out suggestions and corrections and cheers and jeers as needed to the boys that he could see. And then one day he told me that he could tell that the boys who needed his leadership the most were all moving inside my cell for class, where he couldn't see them. And I checked it for a few days and discovered that he was quite right. And then Busuku said we really had to get him a crossbar like mine, you see, sawed in half. But I said that it really seemed to be up to the sergeant, and so the scene was set for the confrontation. The sergeant was sitting in my cell for a moment after class with his son. The other boys had already gone home. I often wondered where home was for them. Ravi, oh, Sergeant, Ravi, sir, called Busuku from the other side of the wall. Uh-oh, smiled the sergeant softly. He wants something. Sergeant, sir, began Busuku, and then it all poured out. Ravi, my good fellow. Now, see here, first of all, I am the senior prisoner in this jail, and so I really should be able to ask for a simple privilege that, well, frankly, other, more junior prisoners of jail are already enjoying. The sergeant rolled his eyes. I assume he means you in Long Life, he said to me quietly. Ajit looked up from scratching the little lion in his lap and smiled. Secondly, and most importantly, and I must say that our yoga expert, Miss Friday herself, is in perfect agreement with me, it is of paramount importance that I be able to move around the entire outside room and even the neighboring cell in order to impart my own, not insubstantial, fund of yoga knowledge to my boys during their classes. As such, I require Busuku, sighed the sergeant, just say it. Ravi, you got to get me a crossbar like Miss Friday has. The sergeant's forehead wrinkled. I don't know, Busuku. I mean, we do need to keep up some appearance of incarceration here. I mean, what would the public think? And the captain? And goodness forbid, what if the superintendent himself walks in? Superintendent? Snorted Busuku. Why, he's nothing. I could take care of that myself in a minute. Sure, Busuku, said the sergeant wearily. So, I don't get the crossbar? Returned Busuku. Well, I'm not sure, said the sergeant. I'll have to think about it. I knew you'd say no. I didn't say no. I knew you'd say no, and I knew you wouldn't have the guts to do it. I don't not have the guts. I just don't want to say no. Then you're saying no, then? No, I'm not. There it is, you just did. No, I didn't. Again, twice. How many no's? No, I mean yes. I mean Busuku. See here. No, I knew you'd say no, and I made a plan for when you'd say no, and you'll be sorry you said no. And then we heard some frantic scraping and tugging, and then shortly afterwards a low groan. Busuku, exclaimed the sergeant. What are you doing? You'll find out, came a strained voice. and you'll be sorry. And then there was a low, heart-rending moan. Busuku, cried the sergeant, leaping up. What are you doing? I told you, Ravi. See, if you can sleep after this one, I'm over here in unsupported headstand pose, and I'm going to stay this way until... And there was a rather painful moan. Sorry, my head's getting all red, all puffed up like a watermelon already. You see, I'm going to stay this way until my head explodes, or what, Busuku? Or until... Oh, the pain! Or until you agree to give me the crossbar! Oh! I looked up the sergeant quickly. Sergeant, sir, he really shouldn't be doing that pose at all. I haven't gone over with him how to do anything close to that pose properly. He really could hurt himself. Another groan, and then some popping sounds, like somebody sticking their finger in their mouth and popping their cheek. The sergeant rushed to the door and stopped dead just outside, staring heartstruck at the next cell. Ajit and I scrambled to our feet. Sergeant, I cried. And Busuku, the sergeant cried, and we rushed out to see what the sergeant saw. Busuku, sitting on the ground, facing the wall, his eyes closed in the middle of a deep groan, having just made another popping sound, yes, with his finger in his cheek. Busuku, roared the sergeant. That's not headstand. Busuku opened his eyes and looked around at us and gulped. Right you are, sergeant. Then he touched his finger to his head and thought, I'd rather, well, you see, the preparatory position for the unsupported headstand, you see. And he concluded reasonably. Then he added in a guilty voice, does this mean I don't get the crossbar, Ravi? No, roared the sergeant. And then he said, yes. Before I could say a word at our next class, the captain held up his hand. Wait, he said simply, then turned and took a pile of papers off the stack closest to him. My reports. To the superintendent, he said wryly. All made up. All of them. Lies to make us look good. He set his hand on top of the papers with his head bent down, thinking. I mean, let me put it bluntly, Miss Friday. Anyone sitting and reading this part of the first and greatest book ever written about yoga must be thinking the same thing I'm thinking now. I mean, if you really think over everything he said so far, first about not really being themselves, things not being themselves from their own side, and second, how the way we personally see everything must be coming from our side, and third, how seeds in our own mind force us to see what we see, and fourth, how those seeds are planted every time we do or say or even think something good or bad towards others. And then when the master starts going through his short list of the most powerful ways of planting both good and bad seeds, well, I mean, anyone who has grasped the different ideas in the short book up here, anyone who really cares about what's going to happen to them, including me, well, by now you've got to be thinking about all the seeds you've already planted before you knew. About mistakes, about the mistakes we've all made, which must have hurt other people, some very seriously. And me personally, thinking about what happened with the sergeant and then his boy, and thinking about so much of the work I've done since I've sat in this office, so many lies, so much stealing, really, from so many others. I mean, I want to know if you'd be willing to say something today about how we can stop or remove the bad seeds that we know we already have in our mind, waiting to go off. It seems doubly important to me. As we said before, these seeds are constantly gathering power, doubling, maybe tripling, every single day that passes until they finally ripen and make us see something painful. Because if there's no way to stop the ones we already have, then I can't see a lot of hope for just normal people like me. I nodded. It was time. I think you're right, I said. I think we should cover this now, and later we'll go on with the last two forms of self-control. Thank you, Miss Friday, said the captain, with a sound of relief that made me realize he really understood how important this part was, if we ever hoped for anything good to happen in our lives. Now the master begins. He begins this point by saying, when the images start to hurt you, sit down and work on the antidote. The images he's talking about are the painful things that the bad seeds will make you see. These things will hurt you unless you can stop them first. I mean, you can either stop a bad thing before it happens, or you can stop the rest or the future of bad things that is already happening, something like your bad back. If you can get at the bad seeds already planted in your mind, and this is what the master calls the antidote, a very clear series of steps found throughout the ancient books, steps that you can sit down and work out to stop bad seeds before they go off. Now, here are the steps you have to go through. There are four, and the master begins the first one by saying, the images, people who hurt me or the like, come from what I did myself, or got others to do for me, or what I was glad to hear others had done. The point is that the first step is going into your own mind and destroying bad seeds that you know are there. The first step is to go back to the basics, to go over what you have already planted by mistake and how you planted it. And that means, first of all, really recognizing that you did something to plant a seed. Here, before anything else, the master wants to remind us that there are three ways of planting seeds, either good or bad. The first way, obviously, is just by doing or saying, or even just thinking something repetitive or negative and watching ourselves as we do it, which, as you know, is what plants the seeds in our minds. But the master also wants us to know that whenever we get someone else to do something harmful for us, then the seed is planted in us the same. So it doesn't matter who else does the dirty work if you are behind it. The captain lifted a finger. Does that mean that the person we get to do the bad thing for us doesn't get a bad seed? No, they do too. You do both. And so you get the extra seed of making them get the seed that will hurt them. Oh, he said glumly, his mind off again on the past bad seeds that he hadn't even known about. And then lastly, there are all the negative seeds that we plant just by being glad about negative things that we've heard other people have done. And even if we didn't ask them to personally, these seeds are not as strong as the ones we plant when we do something ourselves, but they add up quickly since we are so often glad, say, that someone we don't like has gotten hurt, or even if we are too civilized to have hurt them ourselves. The captain paused again to calculate these seeds and shook his head in exasperation. We'd better get to the seed destruction part fast, he wheezed. But this is the seed destruction part, at least the first step of it. You have to stop and think carefully about how the seeds work in order to get at them before they ripen into people who come to hurt you or anything else of the like. Images like back pain that ripen from seeds to deliver us our pain. Remember again that we can only destroy seeds that have already ripened into problems. That is, we can stop them from continuing, no matter how old the problem might be. Even one that you've had as far back as your birth, in case like this seed is too old to remember planting it. So we have to stop and think about what it probably was, given our current problem. If it's a very old health problem, for example, we can assume that the seed was planted by hurting someone else, even if we don't remember doing it, and then we work from there. Got it, he said, and I could see him taking mental notes. The master continues then on to the first step by saying, and what came before them was either craving or hating or dark ignorance. You see, whenever we do something negative, one of these bad thoughts has to come before. The master has covered them earlier when we went through the various negative thoughts. I paused. Ah, yes, said the captain almost immediately. These must be our old friends liking things stupidly and liking things and disliking things stupidly, and then misunderstanding them in the first place. Exactly, I said. And these three are also known as the three poisons, because they poison our hearts and make us then do things that would hurt people and plant seeds to hurt ourselves, he added. Let's check, I said. Examples? The captain didn't have to think long. The corporal comes in the morning and asks me the dumbest question, which was, I mean, he wants to know if we can take that old abandoned cow that ate my pen and keep him in the back and take care of it. That's stupid? Well, yes, said the captain defensively. There's no room for a cow behind the jail, completely out of the question. I see. Yes, well, so, when he asks this stupid question, I'm faced immediately with a choice. One, I can see him as being stupid from his own side, which is completely impossible, as a pen that was a pen from its own side. And therefore, also a fully functional pen even to the same ridiculous cow in question. Two, I can see him as being stupid because I was, say, purposely unpleasant to someone else in the past, say, something that hurt their feelings. Now, if I choose the first option and see him as annoying from his own side, which is what the master calls dark ignorance here, yes, then, well, since it's not my fault, then, you see, then I can start disliking him stupidly. What the master calls hating here, I added. And then I'm well on my way to, well, calling him a nincompoop and seeing him get hurt and almost start to cry and run out the door. Oh, no, really? I asked. Yeah, said the captain a little sadly. But anyway, then I've just planted a seed in my own mind to see someone say something bad to me again, which is what started the whole thing in the first place. And so the vicious circle is set into motion again. And what about an example for what the master calls here craving? Oh, that's pretty easy, said the captain. It's why I wanted to talk about getting rid of the old bad seeds in the first place. Say I'm like anyone, working for someone else, and I want to make my boss happy. In my case, that would be the superintendent. And it's not wrong to want your boss to be happy, he continued. It's a good thing, in fact. But suppose you want this thing the wrong way, stupidly. You crave it in a way that comes from misunderstanding it, from the dark kind of ignorance. Which is to say, you forget that if you see the superintendent walk in and compliment you on a job well done, it's got to be happening because good seeds you planted before, when you yourself spoke with honesty and encouragement to someone else. And if you forget that, then you might fall into that old, most stupid way of viewing the world around you. You might be tempted to do the most stupid of all things and try to force a good result to happen, which is the boss giving you a compliment, by doing something bad to cause it, say, writing false reports. Or even just exaggerated reports, I added. Oh no, really? I mean, just a little exaggeration? Surely that's not a problem. It is a kind of lying, I said. The pictures don't match. We went through that already. Then what you're basically saying is that we all have to live like saints? He objected. Saints are better, I mused. I'll be honest with you, Captain. It takes a tremendous amount of good seeds, and it takes removing a tremendous amount of old bad seeds if you want to have any hope of actually seeing you and your world change into the most beautiful living light of all. You have to give it your whole heart, your whole effort, and countless others are depending on you, depending on each of us, to do it. Yes, we do have to be good, very good, and we have to know why we are and how to do it. And that brings us to the end of the first step in destroying old bad seeds. I think we'll cover this and then do the rest in our next session. Here the master says, they are lesser or medium or greater power. I mean, you have to know what makes one seed more powerful than another. Because when you get into the business of destroying old bad seeds, you have to go after the most powerful ones first. The first consideration here is the negative seriousness of the act. I mean, under normal circumstances, it is much more serious to kill someone, for example, than to lie to them. That point's pretty obvious. What you might not guess is that the most serious mistake of all is simply to hold or to spread a view of the world which is mistaken. I waited to see if the captain would pick it up. I can guess what you mean by that, he said. I mean, suppose it really is true that if you can learn to do even a small good deed constantly, but with infinite hopes of benefit for infinite beings as you do, then you can actually become like an angel who can go anywhere and help anyone. And suppose instead you thought that, say, your own body comes from its own side. I mean, suppose your view of things said that they had to be the way they seem to be now because they come from themselves. And then suppose you influence other people to think that way, perhaps without even thinking much about it. Well, I guess then that you would have deprived them of something else even more precious than whatever mortal life they have left anyway. And so a simple way of viewing things can kill more people than any physical action, he concluded. I'm afraid so, I agreed. And that would be the most powerful bad seed of all, you see, and the first one we'd want to go after. He nodded and added it to his mental notes. Now, seeds are also more powerful if what we do is directed towards a more potent object. I mean, all life is precious, equally precious. But if we were, say, to kill a physician who himself was already engaged in saving lives of many sick people, it would plant a much more powerful seed than killing someone who wasn't so engaged. And so we'd want to make sure to try to stop any seed we had ever created by hurting someone who was especially kind or helpful, you see. Doing something negative with very strong emotions can also make a seed much more powerful. It's one thing to harm another out of strong feelings of hatred. It's another thing to hurt them almost by accident. And here, too, we have to mention intention, which is perhaps the biggest factor of all. A big mistake done towards someone can make a much smaller seed if our intention was neutral or even good, say when a child kills an animal not because any kind of hatred, but only to please a parent who doesn't know any better. You see, if it is the very fact of how we see ourselves do an action that plants a bad or good seed in our minds, then intention, which is almost our own awareness of ourselves as we act, is crucial, the most crucial. Then do we plant a bad seed, say, if we kill a person in accident on the road? You do, I said, simply because the deed was done. But the seed is infinitely less than if you'd done it intentionally. Seems to work a lot like normal court of law, said the captain. It does, for it's mostly only common sense, and except, of course, that justice is always done impartially. The rules which govern seeds are as cold and unforgiving as something like the law of gravity. If you step off the roof of a building, you're going to fall. And so you have to work within these rules to stop the seeds before they have a chance to flower. A few more points here, and then we'll get on with the poses. A seed is obviously more powerful if the negative thing that you've done to plant it was something you'd planned to do. It's like premeditation in a crime. And a seed is obviously less powerful if you try to hurt someone but fail to. There's an element of recognition there, too. If you kill the town doctor, but you had no idea he was the town doctor, then the seed is not as strong. And finally, and this is perhaps the most important of all removing of bad seeds, a lot of how strongly a seed is planted depends upon whether you decide to own it afterwards. That is to say, a seed's power is increased substantially if you hurt another person and say to yourself, "Good, I did it. He's been hurt and I'm glad." If, on the other hand, we succeed in hurting someone, but then afterwards step back and feel sorry for what we've done, then the seeds are planted to stop that first seed. Chapter 40, Old Debts Canceled. The improvement in Mataji's gnarled fingers was amazing. I often felt that she had even more faith in yoga and the yoga ideas I was teaching than I did myself. And the results told the story. Her hands already felt so well that sometimes she would pick up a ball of yarn that I was using for a rug and twist the threads wistfully in her fingers in a way that told me she had once weaved things herself and she missed it and wanted to try again. I was taking her out to the porch after class one day, and it was lovely. It was a lovely porch now, all straight and clean and freshly painted, all by the corporal, all on his own. He himself burst out of a side room just then, With the sergeant in tow, they nearly ran us over, rushed to the captain's door and knocked, and the door opened in a single motion. "Captain, sir," exclaimed the corporal, and Mataji and I went to peek in and see what all the excitement was about. The corporal stood at the side of the captain's desk and set a huge, old, dusty sheet of paper down on it. "There it is, sir," he announced. "There's what, corporal?" asked the captain, annoyed and already neglecting to ask who had planted the seeds for this latest irritating image of his subordinate. "Ah, well, I thought it takes time. It takes practice." "Yes, there it is," repeated the corporal. "Isn't it, sergeant, sir?" The sergeant nodded hastily as the captain repeated, "There is what, corporal?" "Sergeant, what is this paper?" "Decree," began the sergeant. "Royal decree," burst in the corporal. "Royal decree granting the land that this jail stands on. And so we can keep the cow. We can take care of her." "Wait a minute," said the captain. "Sergeant, corporal, sit down here. Take it easy. What does the king have to do with the cow?" "Well, it's quite clear," rushed on the corporal, sitting and leaning over the desk and pointing to a section of the paper. "You see, the land we were granted for the jail, it goes back hundreds of yards, all the way to the stream beyond the trees out back. And that means we not only have plenty of land to keep the animals." "What animals?" cried Captain. "I thought we were talking about a cow, one cow." The corporal looked up in the captain's face and with wounded disbelief. "Why, she's not a cow, sir. She's a mother. She has a baby. We can't take her in and just tell her calf to go away. Why, she's been through enough already. Probably got dumped out on the road one day when she couldn't pump out enough milk to pay for her feed. We can't put her through another trauma." The captain's hand went by instinct back to his old bad back that wasn't bad anymore, and then settled on his forehead instead. "Corporal, really, this is a jail, for goodness sake, not a zoo. If you want to, you can just set out a bucket of leftovers or whatnot for her on the porch every day and leave it at that." The corporal looked scandalized. "Sir, that would seriously detract from the tidy beauty of our new refurbished porch. And don't forget that the master himself says the first commitment is to cleanliness." The corporal looked over to the sergeant for support. "That's what the book says," the sergeant concurred. "Moreover, Mrs. Cow would be very likely to damage the garden if she were allowed to come in the front gate whenever she pleased," pointed out the corporal. "What garden?" asked the captain, clutching his forehead in pain. "The flower garden out front," explained the corporal patiently, as if the captain had gone mad. "But we don't have a flower garden out front," groaned the captain, "nor do we have a front gate," he wheezed. "Got you there," said the sergeant, pointing out the door. We all turned and saw a new and pretty little yellow gate leaning up against the far wall. "And the flowers, well, they're almost all planted already," continued the corporal excitedly. "And they're not the kind of seeds you'd want to stop before they ripen, sir." "Why, the master says..." "Spare me the master," moaned the captain. "I get enough of that from Miss Friday. Ravi, sergeant, you figure it out with him. Make sure he doesn't go overboard. Now leave me alone before I plant some really bad new seeds." "So the first step in getting rid of your bad seeds," I began in our next class, "is simply to go over what you did to plant them, reviewing everything you know about how they were. And then naturally, if you really grasp how your life in the coming months and years will be ruled by these seeds, you will start to wish you had never planted them." "We should feel guilty about them, I guess," said the captain. I made a little face and thought about it. "I don't think guilty is the right idea, Captain. In fact, I don't think the ancient book even has a word for the feeling guilty. Suppose you walk into your friend's house on a really hot day and you just see a cup full of something that looks like juice on the table, and you know he wouldn't mind, and you just drink it down in one big thirsty gulp, and then your friend rushes in with a loud cry and tells you you've just drunk a cup full of strong cleaner, which happens to be poisonous. Would you at that very moment feel guilty?" The captain laughed. "Guilty? No. Stupid? Yes. I'd mostly feel like finding out fast how to get it back out of me. And at any rate, I'd feel sorry I drank it, and I'd definitely resolve never to drink cups of unknown stuff at my friend's house again. That's the spirit, I said. You see, it's not beating yourself up. It's thinking very clearly about the danger you've put yourself in and doing something quickly to fix it. Guilt is really useless, but regret spurs us on to take action to fix things. And the master advises us next to think to ourselves like this. Say to yourself then, who knows what pain I have planted for myself? The results could be countless. Sit and work out the antidote. And with this, he covers the second step, which is just an honest and well-informed regret about the old bad seeds that you planted before you knew about the seeds. It could also be thinking about new bad seeds you've planted after you knew better, but you just couldn't control yourself, which is a very common situation that all of us who start out on the path of yoga find ourselves in frequently, as we are just beginning to put our new understanding into practice. This kind of intelligent regret, where you really understand the massive repercussions upon your mind and your reality of even just a small negative action towards another person, feels pretty bad, but has the most wonderful result of its own. A lot like how you feel at your friend's house after you drink the poison. I mean, you think to yourself very, very clearly, I will never do that again. And if you want to know the one thing you can do to destroy the old bad seeds from some serious mistake you may have made earlier in your life, this is it. This is what the master is talking about when he repeats, sit down and work out the antidote. Change the seeds. Change the vibration. And it's also the third step, because the one thing that can really destroy the seeds of a past mistake is to make a definite decision that we will not repeat that mistake. If we have, for example, lied to our employer over a long period of time and we know we have those seeds to face, then we can actually destroy those particular seeds by deciding very consciously that we will not lie that way moving forward. And we dedicate the new power purposely to stopping those old seeds. But then, of course, we must act. We must stick to our decision in order for it to work. Ah, now that really makes sense, said the captain. And then he added, although it would be nice if there were an easier way of stopping the consequences of old bad things we've done. I mean, really, not doing them again is undoubtedly a lot more difficult than it sounds. Well, there is no easier way, I said bluntly. And that's just the way it is. I guess we should just be very happy that there is a way of all. Or is a way at all. Goodness, that really sounded like my teacher, Katrine. We sat for a moment, and then I added, one more thing, though, about resolving not to repeat a mistake and sending the power consciously to stop the old bad seeds. What's that? Asked the captain. Well, there are some mistakes we make that are pretty easy to decide we will never do again. Say, a kind of killing, for example, once we have learned that it's wrong. But there are other mistakes we make that it would frankly be difficult to promise we will never repeat again. Say, getting mad at your boss or yelling at him or her. And so the masters of old, they used to say that in order to avoid piling up a new lie on top of our original mistakes, we should, in cases like this, just make a commitment to avoid the same mistake again for a specific period, for a length of time that you can actually commit to. Say, promising not to yell at the boss again for a week, and then trying very hard to watch yourself for that long. That makes sense, said the captain, and I could almost see him make another note on a list in his mind. Fourth step, I said, and then you'll know all you need to know about stopping your old bad seeds before they go off in your mind. This is thinking of a concrete action that you could undertake which would be the opposite of what you did, just to show how much you regret it, something very tangible to make up for the mistake, to change the vibration. You mean, say, that I could call in the corporal and apologize for being rough on him? That's one thing, I nodded. But what we're talking about here doesn't necessarily have to be done with the person that you hurt. If, say, either in your life you had been involved in some business dealings that weren't very honest and cost other people money, then as this sort of makeup activity, you could work for some time at feeding hungry people. If you had been involved in killing, you could dedicate some time to working as a volunteer in a hospital. But the most powerful makeup of all is simply to set aside some time to sit quietly and go over in your mind how seeds draw pictures in your mind and turn neutral objects into the very world around us. Just thinking about the pen and the cow, then, asked the captain, almost incredulously. Exactly so. That's what really kills old bad seeds and makes them stay dead. The master even goes so far as to say, contemplation on this point destroys the storehouse of seeds. And why do you guess this is so? I asked. The captain thought for a moment and then smiled hugely. Let's say you've been yelling at someone regularly, and to make up for that, you decide to sit down and practice thinking about how, say, a young man with a tummy is just sort of a neutral collection of shapes and sounds. Now, if I happen to experience those shapes and sounds as an extraordinarily irritating junior officer, then it can only be because I have been just as irritating to someone else in the past, which planted seeds in my mind that are going off now and making my mind see those shapes and sounds as a pest. The point, he said then, is that the more you sit down and think about seeds to make up for a mistake that you've made, then the less likely you are to repeat the mistake. And not repeating our mistakes also just happens to be the third step, the one that does the most towards destroying old bad seeds. Perfect, I smiled. Perfect. And he sat for a moment basking in the praise. And then he asked, do you really think I can get rid of all of them? Because we both knew that some of his old bad seeds were serious. You can and you must, I affirmed. For the very big seeds, you'll want to repeat steps again and again over, say, a number of months. But then they will be gone, and you will feel it, a kind of lightness. And then you must know they are gone and take in the joy of it and never look back again. The master says, you will never have to pay those old debts back. Not a single one. Chapter 41, The Spirit's Breath. And now the master says that sexual purity is the fourth form of self-control. In the ancient books, the expression that the master uses here, sexual purity, always refers to chastity in the sense of refraining from every type of sexual activity. And the master mentions it because his book was primarily intended in his own time for people who had already made that commitment. But he places this form of self-control in a position within the standard list where we know it also refers to the most common form of serious sexual misconduct, which is committing adultery with the sworn husband or wife of another person. And this is certainly one of the most harmful things that we can do to someone else, a source of terrible pain and tragedy for many families. We stopped and thought for a moment. I think we have to talk about this one a little deeper, I said. Because there are so many strong emotions and feelings of guilt and questions that come up about sex in general. I think first we have to talk about why that's so, and then we can step back and clarify exactly where and how sexual activity could be right or wrong. People are deeply attracted to sex. It is an incredibly strong drive in almost everyone. And there's a reason for this, which goes back to those subtle channels and winds in the body that we spoke about before. You see, as we said, we have these winds inside us from the first moment of life within the womb, and by nature they are blocked, bottled up, because of areas where the two side channels wrap around the middle channel. Our very body forms around the pattern determined by these choke points. Whenever we have those different negative thoughts, misunderstanding where the things around us really come from, and then liking and disliking things in an ignorant way because of this misunderstanding, then the subtle winds within us flow more powerfully in the two side channels. They then choke the middle channel even more strongly, and this is ultimately responsible for the fact that we grow older, or even for death itself. Now, in the normal course of our lives, the middle channel stays choked almost completely, almost all the time. A strong thought, and therefore the wind upon which it rides, travels freely within the middle channel only on very rare occasions. One such occasion happens to occur during the process of dying itself, as the side channels dissolve, releasing their hold. But there are other moments too, moments of extreme compassion, incredibly fierce moments of love. In such a moment, anyone at all, even if they have no knowledge at all of the very existence of the channels and the knots, can suddenly feel what it's like for a major knot to loosen briefly and a flash of pure inner wind to burst through the choke points into the middle channel. A fierce emotion of love happens to trigger this momentary breakthrough at the knot located right behind the heart, which is why for centuries the heart has been associated with feelings of love and compassion. And you must know that whether they consciously understand anything at all about the channels and the knots, every person alive has a deep craving for that incredible feeling of the inner winds of life cracking through the knots and even briefly, any amount moving in to the middle channel. When any amount of wind at all passes through the middle channel like this, even for a minute or two, it's as if our deeper body, our spirit body, has been allowed to take a deep breath after years and years without any breath at all. Deep inside, too, every living person senses that if this breath were allowed to go on freely, that their entire being could change. For this is exactly how it happens that we make our transformation into pure beings of light. This is how we become a pure being who can appear on countless worlds to help countless people all in the same moment. And this is our destiny, you see. It is what we all will become. And deep inside, we know it and crave desperately for that moment, that feeling. And you see, there is another moment in the life of any person, whether they know anything about channels or not, when a brief burst of wind, the spirit's breath, flies up in the middle channel. And that is during the few peak moments of the sexual experience. And so you see, this gives some feeling of why the sexual drive can be so powerful, why this craving too is so deep in people. It is so strong, you see, that it can blind a person for weeks or years to the repercussions of whatever action they are driven to do to fill this urge. And so you will see normal people expend huge amounts of effort, spend sizable portions of their wealth to do things that hurt quite a few people in order to fulfill the drive for sex. And it's not that sex itself is in any way wrong. The master is not saying that it is. In the ancient books, sex between consenting persons who have reached what is considered a normal age of responsibility is fine, so long as they have no other commitments. But it is very wrong and destructive to have sex with a person who is sworn by marriage to another person unless that bond has already been dissolved by a formal and mutual agreement. And the seeds that you plant by doing such harm to another person's spouse are very strong. They can prevent you for the rest of your life from having any happy experiences at all with those of the opposite sex. It is one of the main causes for the many sad and frustrated people who cannot find a suitable partner in life. The captain nodded and thought for a moment. "That makes sense," he said, as usual. "And of course, it helps explain why the same forms of self-control pop up in the teachings of the great beings all over the world and all through history." And then he thought some more. "But what you just said," he mused, "do you mean to imply that if we were able to keep sizable amounts of wind flowing through the middle channel on a regular basis, that we would feel... I mean, we would feel like those few moments with someone of the opposite sex, or the same sex, but all the time?" "That's exactly right," I said. "And that's why people who are getting close to that point, you see, they move beyond sex altogether. They know that the sexual act can crack open the middle channel, but only for a few moments, and then it shuts back up like a clam. And sometimes we feel worse than before. And they know that there are ways of forcing the channel open briefly. I mean, a certain kind of drug, maybe herb. They have power too. And with them, we can sometimes get glimpses for a few minutes of what our ultimate future will be like. But people like this also know that these are not ways of keeping the middle channel open. You see, it takes a tremendous amount of time and thought and trouble to enjoy one of these experiences, even for a few moments, and then you're always back to zero. If you've hurt someone or collected some bad seeds to get the experience, then you're beyond back to zero. So these people have decided to dedicate all their time and effort to reaching the real method of keeping the middle channel open, working at it consciously from the outside with poses and breathing exercises, working at it consciously from the inside, sitting silently and practicing infinite thoughts of kindness, doing good for others and destroying the seeds from past mistakes, purposely creating the future garden, cultivating the seeds that would make you see the middle channel open wide, open forever, and a new body form around that. On a practical level, I put my Katrin voice on, that means, Captain, sticking to the fortress principle. Don't even get close to a situation where you could damage a marriage. Here's an easy rule of thumb. Anytime you are around anyone of the opposite sex who is married, say even just a woman who comes to deliver the jug of water, the captain's eyes twitched a little, then never say anything to them that you wouldn't say if their husband were standing right there next to them. He looked out the window, then slowly smiled. All I was hoping for was a nice exercise program to fix my back, and now you're trying to turn me into light. He paused and then turned and said, "Let's do it." The sergeant came in out of the rain one day that week, dragging a boy by the arm. I recognized him as Young Warrior, the first of Busuku's boys I'd ever met outside on the path. He was wet and cold and shaking in his tattered shirts and short. "Busuku," roared the sergeant, "out here now." The crossbar, Ravi," I heard Busuku's voice, but I could tell it was no joke. The sergeant pulled off the bar, tossed it on the floor, and dragged Busuku out by the collar. "Corporal," he yelled, "front and center." The corporal walked sleepily out of the front room. "Miss Friday, if you will," called the sergeant then, and he herded us all into the captain's room. The sergeant pushed us all to the floor around the desk and stood there where he was before the flabbergasted captain, pointing his finger down in Busuku's face. "How could you?" he bellowed. Could what, Ravi?" blustered Busuku. "Look at this boy," glowered the sergeant. "Half dead from the cold and rain, I found him and a bunch of the rest of them all huddled under a big tree. Told me that was their house. Told me that was where they lived. I can't believe it, Busuku. How could you?" Busuku let out one loud, "Ah!" and then sat up and thought for a moment. Finally, he nodded and pulled himself up tall. See here, Sergeant, and you too, Captain." And this time it was Busuku pointing his beefy finger. "First of all, you can't keep me locked up all the time and expect me to be providing for my boys. Secondly, even when I was outside and times were good, I couldn't afford to keep a place for us. I mean, I was sleeping under that tree with them too. And lastly, I never got any help from anyone. I mean, abandoned children wandering around a town, and the corporal's pet cow and calf and pig." "A pig?" interjected the captain with concern. The sergeant and corporal hastily looked down. "And so, I mean, what else could I do? What else could you do?" cried Busuku, glaring around the circle at each of us. All was silent for a moment. And then the sergeant said, "Well, what's past is past. I'm talking about here and now, and I absolutely refuse to allow young people who attend our school." "Ravi," sighed the captain, "this is not a school, it's a jail." "Who attend our school jail," the sergeant corrected himself. Busuku shook his head. "It's not a school jail either. That doesn't sound too good." "Jail school?" tried the captain. "Jail," repeated the captain. "School," I sneaked in. "Anyway," continued the sergeant, "we absolutely refuse to allow our young people here to sleep under a tree. Am I right?" He looked around at all the rest of us, everyone except the captain, and we all nodded enthusiastically, perhaps influenced by some vague memory of his stick. "But where are we going to put them?" asked the corporal. The sergeant stared at the ground, thinking furiously. My house is full. You and your mother, it's just a tiny thing. The captain. And here the captain looked a little panicky. Sergeant, said the corporal quickly. You know, it's better just to put them here. The sergeant's eyes brightened. Of course. A cell wouldn't do, said the corporal. Record room? Well, the record room. Let's clear it out. I mean, just temporarily, said the sergeant. Oh, right. And then expand the whole southern wall of the jail, said the corporal. Certainly room there, according to the decree, sergeant. Share the structural wall, corporal. Exactly. Break down doors through after construction, sergeant. What about water, corporal? Pipe it in by bamboo from the back stream. Decree stipulates right of way, sergeant. Captain, staring from face to face, lost. Sanitation, corporal. Time to go underground, sergeant. 8-inch baked brick, corporal. Best for the quick job, sergeant. Great, that's it. Everything's settled then. We can start tomorrow, corporal. Captain, sir, we've got you okay with this, right? Rushed on the sergeant. The captain stared at the other two in a complete daze and nodded without knowing he was nodding. The rest of us basked for several quiet moments in the glow of a grand expectation for helping others. And then Busuku suddenly frowned and cleared his throat and looked over in my direction and said, may I ask who's going to pay for all of this? I shrugged, looked at the corporal. He shrugged, glanced at the sergeant. He shrugged, turned toward the captain, eyes pleading. And the captain came slowly out of his daze and gazed slowly at our faces and then at the stacks of papers all around. And he said sadly, men, Miss Friday, Busuku, there's something I've been meaning to tell you. I mean, to be quite frank, I've made a decision, a personal decision, that I really can't go on any longer writing false reports of our accomplishments to the superintendent. There was a sudden little burst of applause from all the rest of us before we'd even thought to do it. The captain looked up with a broad smile and wiped a tear from his eye. Why, thank you. I had no idea that you would understand. And then he choked with emotion, and there was another quiet moment. And so, he continued, I must say that the three of us will need to actually, you see, get out more often and actually patrol around, you see, and help people who need us. Another burst of applause. The captain reddened and smiled like a new bride. Right, he went on, and thank you again. But I'm afraid you see that this means that, well, at least for a while, we may not get nearly as much financial support as we used to. We'll all have to buckle down and tighten our belts for a while at least until the new seeds kick in, he said confidently, glancing at me. I gave him a big smile of encouragement for his courage. And that also means, he added slowly, that I have absolutely no idea where we're going to find the money to build this addition to our jail or school for the kids. And with that, he sighed heavily and sat back down with a glum look. Again, silence all around for some very long minutes. And then the corporal sat up and said firmly, I'll take care of it.